On a cold winter day on January 2nd, 1935, a well-dressed man wearing a black overcoat came in from the shivery winter air into the Hotel President in Kansas City, Missouri. He immediately stood out with his height and build, and was easily identified by a glaring facial scar. The man had no luggage with him, but he booked a room for one night, specifically requesting an interior room not facing the street outside. Paying his room fee up front in cash and signing in as Roland T. Owen, with an address in Los Angeles. Rambled Profs, the hotel bellboy, then guided Owen to room 1046. Owen got the key from the bellboy and then promptly left the hotel on an unknown errand.
Jeffrey Dahmer, an unassuming chocolate factory worker, would eventually confess that he had seduced, murdered, and dismembered 17 young men. He even ate some of his victims' body parts.
He was charming, good-looking, and terrifying. A real-life monster hiding in plain sight, Ted Bundy.
The Black Dahlia was a celebrity who was mutilated and found drained of blood with a haunted-like smile carved on her face.
I'm someone who has been a murderer for almost 20 years. It isn't that impossible in this society. It happens.
I'm Rihanna Miller, and you're listening to Mystery Mondays. Listener discretion is advised. Later on that same day, hotel maid Mary Soapdick entered the room to clean and found a noticeably distraught and anxious-looking Owen sitting in the dim room with the shades drawn and only a faint glow from a single lamp. Upon seeing the maid, Owen composed himself, stood up, and went to leave the room, telling Mary on the way out that she was to leave the door open as he was expecting a friend to come over later. He was very specific about her leaving the door open and mentioned it several times before he left the room. Mary returned to the room around 4 p.m. to leave clean towels and was confused to find Owen lying on his bed, fully closed, and staring at the ceiling in deep thought. The maid noticed a note on the desk that read, "Dawn, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait." Realizing that she was intruding, she left quietly, deciding to come back the next day. On the morning of January 3rd, Mary found the door oddly locked from the outside, and when she entered with her passkey, she found Owen sitting there in the dark once again. Owen was talking on the phone and seemed uncomfortable. He waved her in, and as she cleaned, she overheard pieces of the conversation, with the strange man nervously saying at one point, "No, Dawn, I don't want to eat. I am not hungry. I just had breakfast. No, I'm not hungry." Mary quietly cleaned and took some dirty towels and left. The maid would have yet another unsettling encounter when she went back. Mary heard two male voices talking from within. Not wanting to bother them, she gently knocked on the door and asked through the door if they needed any fresh towels, which was answered by a deep, angry-sounding voice, saying that they didn't need anything and that she should just go away. On January 4th, around 1 a.m., there was a disturbance from room 1046, which the guests in the neighboring room would later describe as what sounded like a man and a woman arguing, perhaps more than two people, as well as what could have been the sounds of a physical fight. At around 7 a.m. in the morning, an operator noticed that the phone had been left off the hook, and so they sent a bellboy to go find out what was going on. The bellboy went up to check, and a male voice from within told him to come in and turn on the lights, but the door was locked. The bellboy, the same one who had guided Owen to his room, told the occupant that the door was locked and knocked for several minutes, but he was only met with silence after that, and the bellboy shouted through the door to put the phone back on the hook and left in frustration. The guest in room 1046 didn't listen or didn't care, because when 8:30 came around, the phone was still off the hook, so another bellboy named Harold Pike was sent to order them to hang it up. After knocking for several minutes with no response, Pike let himself into the room with his passkey and found Owen lying on the bed fully naked in the shadows, as well as the telephone lying on the floor, Assuming that Owen was just hungover, Pike put the phone back on the hook and left. Oddly, just around an hour later, the operator noticed that the phone was off the hook once again in room 1046, and the first bellboy was sent back up there to check things out. The room now had a do not disturb sign hanging outside, but knocking gathered no response, and so the bellboy opened the door and entered to find Owen hunched over on the floor, holding his head in his hands and framed by splotches of blood on the floor and walls, as well as on the bed. There was enough to send panic through the bellboy, and the authorities were notified. When police arrived, they were able to see that Owen was seriously injured, having been stabbed repeatedly in the chest with a knife and his head sustaining fractures from a powerful blow. It was also found that he had severe bruises on his neck, wrist, and ankles, which seemed to have had ties around them. It seemed as if he had been strangled and tortured. Barely conscious, Owen told police that he had just fallen in the bathtub and that he had not been attacked by anyone. Owen then slipped into a coma and he would later die at the hospital. When authorities searched room 1046, they would find quite a few odd things. For one, there were no clothes anywhere to be found, nor there were any signs of towels or toiletries that the hotel usually provided. A large amount of blood was found on the walls and the bedsheets, as well as in the bathroom, and there were four fingerprints found on the lampshade, which were thought to be those of a woman. There were two glasses of water, and one of them had a jagged piece taken out of it, and the other was sitting pristine and intact, as well as an unlit cigarette and a tiny unopened bottle of dilute sulfuric acid. The room other than that was completely bare, and hotel staff told them that the curtains have not been opened once the entire time Owen stayed. Police were already having trouble figuring out exactly what happened, but things would only steadily get weirder than that. It was soon discovered that Roland T. Owen was not the man's real name, that he had apparently been booked for several other hotels days before the incident, booking under different aliases, and on one occasion was seen with another unidentified man. Additionally, some rather unusual tips came in as well, such as a city worker named Robert Lane, who claimed that he had been approached by a man mistaking him for a taxi on the night that Owen had checked into the hotel. Lane stated that the man was dressed only in underwear and a t-shirt, despite the cold weather, and that when he was told that he wasn't a taxi driver, he was asked where he could get one. Lane had noticed that the man had a bloody wound on his arm, and when asked about it, the man spat out and that he'd get revenge on some unknown party before wandering off into the night. Other tips came in from various bartenders saying that they had seen a man matching Owen's description frequently at the bars in the area, with several women. And an elevator operator at the hotel claimed that he had seen what looked like to be a prostitute wandering around on the night of Owen's death, looking for a room 1026. Although considering the room number is wrong, it is hard to say whether that was a mistake on her part or whether she had anything to do with Owen's death at all. In the meantime, police sent out sketches of the dead man all over the place, but no one seemed to know who he was. When his body was put on display, several people claimed to know who he was, including a local wrestling promoter who said he had been approached by the man to participate in matches and that his real name was Cecile Warner. But none of these claims led anywhere, and Owen's real identity remained elusive. During the funeral preparations, another potential lead came in with an anonymous caller who claimed that the dead man was his brother-in-law. The police were on the wrong track, and I quote, and that there were not to bury him in Potter's Field as planned. The mysterious caller even had all the funeral expenses paid for, a wad of cash sent wrapped up in a newspaper, but no other information was forthcoming and it was yet another dead end. During the actual funeral, no friends or family of the dead man turned up, although an anonymous person did send money and flowers with a note saying, "Love forever, Louise." Police tried to focus on finding out who the mysterious Don was that Owen had mentioned in his note. but they had little to go on. Owen was eventually buried at Memorial Park Cemetery, the whole thing paid for by an anonymous party. Owen's death and the strange circumstances surrounding it are very far from being solved, and the case will remain a cold case with no new leads until 1936, when a woman called authorities identifying herself as Eleanor Oaktree from Birmingham, Alabama. The mysterious woman claimed that she had come across a photo of Owen as she was reading a magazine article about the case, and that she had immediately recognized him as her brother Artemis, who had gone missing a long time ago, according to her. He had disappeared in 1934, and there had been suspicious circumstances surrounding it, as Artemis had apparently sent a series of strange letters to his mother, Ruby, even though he had no idea how to type, and the tone of the letters was all wrong too. The final letter had said that he wanted to see the world and planned to sail to Europe, and that would be the last of it until a strange phone call had come in. The call had originated in Memphis, Tennessee, and was from a man calling himself Jordan, who merely said that Artemis had saved his life and had gone on to get married and settle down in Cairo, Egypt, but an intensive search could not locate him. Interestingly, photos of Artemis were sent to authorities and the resemblance was uncanny, right down to the facial scar, and bizarrely, if it was really Owen, then considering the timeline, the letters and the phone call had happened after his death. This promising lead eventually went cold and investigators were left with nothing. In the years since, there had been other possible leads that have turned up from time to time. Most recently in 2003, when Kansas City librarian John Horner was contacted by an anonymous caller who claimed that he had been going through the belongings of a recently deceased person, he had found a box containing some odd things. Within that box was apparently a pile of newspaper articles on the Owen case, all meticulously arranged, but once again led to a dead end. There are so many odd details and clues and questions surrounding this case. In the meantime, there have been no other leads or no new insights. There have never been any suspects in the investigation, no clear motive, and nothing to tie together all the threads. All information was gathered from mysteriousuniverse.org and allthatinteresting.com. This has been another episode of Mystery Mondays on 91.3 WHJE.